Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeff Sullivan's on Twitter at @based_ball. The senior editor of Fangraphs joins us regularly to talk baseball. And one thing that we did through last week was sort of mourn the loss of the Cubs 2018 version after a 95-win season. Their offense, as Theo Epstein put it, their offense just kind of broke was the word he used, and pointed to a second half where it never got started, and a season, Jeff, that saw the Cubs in a quarter of their games score one or no runs. If someone had told you that a team of in 39 games would do that and still win 95, what would you say the odds of that would be?
Low, I guess. we can go with low. I guess it depends. I don't know. If we're going back to like 1968, then I could have bought it. But, you know, era's a little different. It's been a while since we were able to talk in one of these segments where the Cubs and the White Sox were in the same position.
It's absolutely true. I just wonder where, you know, when Theo talks about evaluating talent versus production and changing the sights on how to internally look at his own players, who yells the loudest the most to you on that roster? Is that Kyle Schwarber that means the most to you? Because that's how it's been focused here.
Right. It gets a little complicated because if you look at I'm going to go with weighted runs created plus here, WRC plus, my favorite simple offensive statistic, simple, if you will. And in 2017, the Cubs had a team WRC plus of 108. That means they were 8% better than the average offense at hitting. And in 2018, this year, the Cubs had a team WRC plus of 108. They were, by that measure and that measure alone, exactly as good as they were the year before. I know their slugging went down, but slugging went down league-wide. There were just fewer home runs, as we've talked about probably like a half dozen times on this segment. But, of course, what matters here is the trajectory. And the Cubs were much worse at hitting in the second half. They were one of the worst offensive teams in the second half in all of baseball. And I think it's pretty easy to identify Chris Bryant as being one of the issues here, but he was hurt. I think you can forgive a player for having a bad shoulder. It seems like he's not going to need surgery in the offseason, so you figure Chris Bryant's going to come back. Wilson Contreras, I'm not sure if he was playing through an injury in the second half. I know that he was playing through an injury in the wild card game, but I don't know if he'd done something before. You look in the numbers and you can see that he just kind of fell off the map in the middle of the year, and I wouldn't be surprised if he were trying to play through something. He didn't really have a qualified backup who could handle much of the load. So there are a lot more factors here you can focus on than just Kyle Schwarber, but I know that it has felt almost inevitable for a few years that Schwarber would end up at some point being an American League player, and it's kind of funny now because you can look at him and you can say, well, he actually improved a lot defensively. He was something like an average defender, maybe even a little better this season. But just with the inconsistency in the hitting approach, it would not be a surprise if Schwarber were moved. But I would hesitate to suggest that he is at or around peak value, which makes him a dangerous player to move, just given how highly the team has spoken of him before.
You also chronicled his insane lack of production in important situations and high leverage moments. That was, I believe he was like a negative 62 in high leverage. That would tell me that is due for a regression, because there's no way that level could be sustained, even if there are guys whose job it is to get him out and hitters like him out in those situations. I would think you'd have to wait for that to normalize before finding value.
Right. I mean, I think when you're looking at so-called high leverage splits, I like to look at them if I'm evaluating something in hindsight, and I can say, well, this guy helped his team more than his surface numbers might indicate, or this guy helped his team less than the surface numbers might indicate. And in high leverage moments this season, according to the final end of season statistics, Kyle Schwarber was 2 hits better than you. I don't mean to demean your baseball playing skills, but I assume they're not great. You are where you are and not on the field. But Kyle Schwarber went, he had 2 hits in 56 high leverage opportunities. And of course, when you have a WRC plus, now remember, WRC plus is a plus right in the name, and his number was -62. That you don't want to end up in that kind of territory. That's like worst hitting pitcher in the league kind of bad. Of course, it's going to be due for regression, but you do wonder. This is not the first time he has struggled overall in high leverage spots. Of course, he's delivered some big hits. We all remember the big hits. It's easy to remember the big hits, the home runs that wound up underneath signs above the stadium. But for his career, he has been worse in clutch spots, and I think it's probably twofold. He's not a contact hitter, and he is a lefty who is vulnerable to good left-handed relievers who are likely to be brought in to face him and him specifically, because he is a big threat. So you figure the other team is focusing on that. So I don't think we're at the point where teams are evaluating players on their clutch performance. I don't think it really factors in that much. And as an example, you can just look at the fact that the Astros gave Josh Reddick a 4-year contract a few years ago, and Josh Reddick statistically has been like the worst clutch hitter of all time, or at least on record. And the Astros didn't believe that to be anything. And so they still gave Reddick a big contract. And I don't think much has moved since then, but it's definitely just one of those things that it gets under your skin, because I think we all want to believe that there are clutch players and there aren't, and it can be frustrating to constantly be told that it's a small sample, but it just feels so important. But at least if the Cubs were thinking of moving Schwarber, I don't think this would be a factor.
Theo Epstein says the expectations are, of course, to win another 95 games or perhaps more and head back into the playoffs next season. A lot of people seem to think they have got the talent to do it. One of the teams that's going to challenge him is the Atlanta Braves, who bowed out of the playoffs. And I'm reading around, seeing a lot of people say, well, the Braves might not have the money to spend or want to spend the money in free agency this offseason. And I'm just wondering, Jeff, with the guys they've got and the youth they have, do they really need to? Is this a team that can just mature into 95 wins next year?
I mean, just as a sort of a rule of thumb, free agency isn't where you want to be making your biggest additions anyway. I don't need to point to any teams other than the Cubs, I guess, if you want to make that argument. But realistically, I don't think anyone would expect the Braves to be in there for a Bryce Harper or a Manny Machado or like a Clayton Kershaw if he hit the market. So if you were looking for more middle tier additions, those aren't players who are going to make a meaningful difference for a team like the Braves anyway. Now, they might have a little more pressure on them because the Phillies are likely to be throwing the money around. The Phillies would be a realistic contender for someone like Machado or Harper, but the Braves have expressed a lot of faith in the internal system that they have put together. This has been considered one of the best farms in baseball for several years running now. They're starting to see the fruits of it. Obviously, this goes beyond just Ronald Acuna, but I do think that it's a team that's going to need to be active this winter. Might not mean free agency active, just because that is kind of profitable is the wrong word. It's not the best market to play in if you are sort of a mid-budget team. But the Braves are presumably going to want to get a little more stability in the bullpen. I think that they could stand to add a starting pitcher, and they're likely to need a corner outfielder or someone to play with Inciarte and Acuna, because I don't know if they're going to bring back Nick Markakis, but I don't think Adam Duvall is going to be the solution there, someone they picked up and was promptly forgotten. The Braves are going to need to just make a series of moves this offseason, because I do think they wound up being probably the worst team to advance to the playoffs, maybe the second worst, depending on how you feel about the Rockies.
I'm looking at a graph here that was posted on Twitter by Mike Petrello. It is the percentage of batters faced by relievers in the postseason. And it goes back to 1969, and you see it on a general uptrend and, you know, popping up in 2004 above 40%. And then all of a sudden, about 2016, that the graph just takes off. And we are now, for the first time, up to 50% relief batters faced. Batters faced by relief pitchers in playoff games. I guess we shouldn't be surprised. We knew it was heading in this direction, but it's really taken a jump.
Yeah, and in 2016, it's not a coincidence. That's when the Indians just leaned on Andrew Miller every single game, and they had no starting rotation beyond Corey Kluber. I think Josh Tomlin wound up making a bunch of starts in the playoffs. It was just a weird year for the Indians. And then I think as far as this number is concerned, of course, it is early because we've only had the shorter series so far, and there's still a lot of baseball left to go, and the Astros are advancing. They have a really good rotation, and the Dodgers are advancing. They have a really good rotation, so these numbers are going to move around a little bit, and the starting pitcher hasn't been abandoned in the playoffs, but this is absolutely a trend. This is not going to be a fluke. Teams are going to be leaning a lot more heavily on their bullpens. I mean, people are furious at Aaron Boone for letting Luis Severino start the fourth inning yesterday. I'm not saying they're wrong. Just saying, think about what this conversation would have been 10 years ago if Luis Severino had come out. He's the Yankees' best starting pitcher, and he didn't look great, but he came out to throw the fourth. And 10, 15 years ago, there would have been no question. Of course he was going to throw the fourth inning. He's the best the Yankees have to offer. But when you have a team that's got like six good relievers, I'm not saying Lance Lynn is the good reliever who should have been brought in after him, but it's just people have gotten used to it pretty quickly. Every team now is at least they try to assemble at least like four good relievers when you make the playoffs. And you look at the Brewers, they've used Josh Hader, Corey Knebel, Jeremy Jeffers, and Joaquin Soria for all three games of the NLDS. They used three of those guys in the game 163 as well. So the Brewers have just given the ball to their best relievers over and over and over again. We saw Brandon Morrow last year, I think, pitch in all but one or two of the Dodgers' playoff games. And this is something that, as teams build deeper and deeper bullpens, it's not going to go away. So this is going to shift the calculus a little bit because you still need starters in the regular season. You need people to pick up those innings. We've talked about bullpen fatigue in the Cubs and for 6 months, but as soon as the playoffs get started, it shifts the balance in favor. It mitigates the weakness of a team that's built like this year's Brewers or like this year's A's, where you can have a weaker starting rotation and it's just
or the
not
Cubs
kill you
or like what the Cubs became
or the Cubs.
So, yeah. Can the Brewers do this?
Well, so it's fun. It's fun now because we know for a fact the Brewers are going to play the Dodgers, and the Dodgers have the far better starting rotation. I think the Dodgers have the far better lineup. The Brewers have the far better bullpen, and the Brewers have the far better defense. It's a more athletic team. So it's going to be these teams aren't perfect. You look at the American League, the Astros are basically perfect as they are constructed. There's not really the problem. Maybe they don't have a great defense, but they don't allow balls in play, so who really cares? So you look at the National League, Dodgers-Brewers, this is going to be the kind of series where the Dodgers are going to be trying to pick up like a two- or three-run lead through five innings and then just hope they can hang on to it, which means I do think the Dodgers are better. I think they're not better than the Brewers are. I think they're a far better offensive team. I mean, just watching them face the Braves, every single hitter in their lineup is dangerous. At least the Brewers roll out someone like Manny Pena or Orlando Arcia or Eric Kratz, just guys who aren't real threats at the plate. And, of course, there's the pitcher spot. But the Dodgers have such a good lineup. So much of this is going to come down to what you make of Kenley Jansen and how close he is to what he used to be. But I think the Brewers are my underdog. I picked them as an underdog in the series, but it's a lot closer than it would be if this were like some sort of weird best of seven in the regular season, just because the Brewers aren't going to ask for more than four innings probably from almost any of their starting pitchers. This is a team that has some big platoon splits on it. The Dodgers can exploit that, but it's going to be a series of games that are kind of split in half. And if the Brewers can win the second half of those games, then they're going to have a real shot.
Great stuff, Jeff. Look forward to talking next week.
Absolutely. You take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.